Welcome to the Mentors Project Podcast, covering mentorship, books, and more. In this podcast, we interview the authors of a new series of books in which we meet the men and women who mentored Western civilization. This is your host, Dr. Roseanne Welch. For more information, visit mentorsproject.org. Our guest today is Robert Barbera, author of Building Wealth, From Shoeshine Boy to Real Estate Magnate, which offers readers a look into how he defines wealth and some tips on obtaining that sort of wealth for themselves. Welcome, Robert.
Good afternoon.
It's lovely to have you. We would like to start by talking about the fact that from reading your book, I see that you have a different or more specific definition of wealth. Could you elaborate for us what wealth means to you?
Yes, wealth isn't the bank account and how much is in there. Wealth is the spirit of the person and how they perceive life. So wealth, or perhaps we could say richness of life, rather than just wealth of life. And so within that richness, I have met people that don't have a fraction of the money that I have, and yet they are so richer because philosophically they see life in the spirit in its fullest dimension. Wealth is the having appreciation. Wealth is not a responsibility. Wealth is a way of using your attributes or your money to do things, to have other people have the joy and purpose in life.
I love that. I think it's very beautiful. What does understanding the real concept of wealth, why is that important for us, especially today?
Well, today we're so superficial, quite honestly. It's like people are living a life of veneer, strictly the surface of life. Unfortunately, I don't mean to speak disrespectful of the newer generations that are coming along, but it's simply my observation that the momentary joy is life to them, and not the concept of a depth and understanding and appreciation of the richness. This all comes from what God has given us and the challenges that we have in the appreciation beyond the material world, but the relationship that we have amongst ourselves and how we treat one another. That's the great person that is the wealthiest person.
I agree. I believe in that myself. My question then would be, how do you think your childhood influenced this idea of wealth, and how does it influence your life in general?
Well, because when I started out in life, I saw how poor we were, and I saw how much we appreciated food, or how much we appreciated something nice that was done for us, a generosity of a person, how they gave you a certain respect even when you didn't have anything. So I felt by not having anything and really being humble, not wanting to be humble, but just simply being humble for not having any wealth or success in my own life, I so much appreciated that now I have a challenge. And so then I had an ambition. And then I moved that on into making tiny steps and becoming a person that had something to say for themselves. So I always felt that each day of my life, each decision that I would make would bring me to another level, and I was always challenged. And quite frankly, I had an old brother that was ever forever telling me to do better and that I could do better. And so there I struck, and fortunately I had a mentor in my life right in the household, and we slept in bed together, and he would energize me to do better.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's a lucky thing you stumbled on in life.
Yes, yes.
How beautiful. Okay, so you've led me into this next question. Besides your brother, what other relationships have fueled your success in life?
Well, certainly my mother is extremely important in the whole thing. Hardworking, always suffering, trying to achieve. She too started from a humble beginning, and she too knew that hard work, patience, and challenges were always before you to keep on moving. And so later on, I think my mentors, they didn't realize that they were my mentors. So when I saw a distinguished person or someone that has achieved something, I really simply felt that what could I do to attain their richness and success in life? And so little by little, a little question here, a little answer here, a lot of thinking. I'm a very quiet person, so I think a lot, and from that, I resolve my future.
That's beautiful. That's well said. Thank you so much. You made me think about the concept of thinking and reading. Do you have any books that really inspired you when you were young, or stories of famous people?
Yeah, well, my inspiration honestly came from seeing a lot of movies when I was young. And the movies was an easy way to see a better life and another life. And dialogue in the movies was good. The stories that were in movies were good. But really, home base came to me not even in high school, but more in college by reading and reading and reading. And it just gave me enormous information in which to improve myself. And that was very helpful. And one time it was said to me, if you really want to be a better person, if you really want to achieve, you will continually read the rest of your life, continually look for another book that's a stepping stone to another book, to another book, to another book. And I did an awful lot of that, where I would read a book and the author would reference another book, which is that book I had to read, which then referenced another book, which is another book. So for me to walk into a library is like a candy store. There's so much there, so much information. It's absolutely a wonderment. And it's right at our fingertips just to walk in a library and start reading. The most beautiful people, the smartest people, people that can tell you how to think and what to do. That's been my joy. I found the person that I wanted to be in the persons that were in that book. I found their life and their expectations and their future then became my future. And so that was wonderful. Oh, there were many books, but I took a huge liking to religious books. And I just get lifted by a line or a word or a thought that I finally find in a book. And it's, you know what's so amazing is somebody can buy a baseball ticket, who knows, $20, $70, $100, and I can go to the library and pick up a book free. I just have a different value system as to what I think is important. And I think, frankly, I think my system is better.
Well, that's the reason you've written a book about it.
Yes.
That's wonderful. Yes. And I completely agree with you. I'm in the habit of when I find a book by someone I respect, if they reference a book that meant something to them, then I go to that book, and that's how I hop and skip through. I think it's a wonderful idea.
Yes, yes.
Well, you just touched on another thing I'm very interested in that you mentioned in the book, this idea of being able to define your values. How does that help you define the goals that you're then going to follow?
It's all a question of moral values. And first of all, it's what the doctors say, do not harm. So surely in all the business acquaintances I had and all the challenges I had, whether I'm working for someone or someone is working for me, I want to feel that no one has taken advantage of the other and that there was always a fair play and that in that whole concept of a relationship with a person is that you know the next day you can just as well warmly welcome them as the previous day. And if you got the advantage, well, so be it. And if they got the advantage, so be it. But when you reach out for the future, you always want to be feel clean, cleansed, and not have a guilty conscience about it. That the choices that was mutually made. So I'm a good person to think that I love the idea. Well, people have worked for me for 20 years and 25 years. I like the idea that I had people working for me and then they retire and now their children are working for me. And I'm actually working on grandchildren now because we developed the relationship. We developed an understanding of that we're both satisfied at the end of the day that our relationship is working and that we have continued it.
Oh, that's a beautiful thought. Would you say that in thinking back on your life in order to prepare the book, did you find any themes that sort of run through your life that have helped you move forward?
Yes. In my mind, it's always a challenge that I look for. I look for something that is doable, and then I challenge myself to do that. I do my greatest thinking when I wake up, and somehow or another, if it's the subconscious or something that is working on me, that the resolution comes to me in those early hours. I'm a morning person, so by the end of the day, I'm tired and I stop thinking. But that inspiration that comes in the morning, that challenge, that I'm able to figure out what that problem is and then to do a resolution. Everything, every day, there's a problem. And with that problem, I feel like, boy, this is a good one I can work on because I challenge myself. And I always tell myself that something can be done better. Find out how to do it and learn from others on how to do it and then go about it and do it now. Act on it and don't belabor anything so that every success honestly brings on more success and more success brings on more success. So when you have that sense of achievement, when you can look back and say, well, I was there, now I'm here, and here I'm going to go there. And so that's the beauty of life. It's the constant creation of what you're doing to get more done. And then that becomes a responsibility. And if you don't feel responsible, you're not going to do anything. What I have a disdain for is when somebody says, I don't know what I want to do. And I says, are you kidding? There's got to be so much to do and you don't know what to do. And then the other one I have a disdain for is when someone says they're bored. I says, you're bored? What is wrong with you that you're bored? Because there's so much to be delighted about. There's so much that you're responsible for, so much conquest to be made. And so if there is a theme, the theme is always to move, move, and move. That's the theme. Never be satisfied, but to be progressive in your satisfaction to achieve something.
Well, I like that. So let's unpack that for a minute, because you're right. If you're never satisfied, then you're never happy. So you're not saying that.
Yes.
You're saying it's about recognizing the milestones?
Absolutely. The only not satisfied because there's more to do. The sense of accomplishment is there, but don't rest on your laurels, because that's the mistake of that sense of achievement, I would call it the lack of future achievement, that it could be your downfall. So I have seen people attain a certain point. Let's say you become a CPA, Certified Public Accountant. Oh, good, I'm a Certified Public Accountant. Yeah, but that's only a step. Or someone says, worse yet, oh, I graduated college. Well, big deal, you graduated college. Don't you know how many more things there are to graduate to? It's that motion. You have to be perpetual motion. And once you have that sense of motion, then not to do anything, then you're bored. But when you finally feel that you can then be motivated, motion motivated, you have another conquest. And so I feel that if there's nothing left to do, then there's something wrong with you.
That sounds like what the kids today would call a meme. It looks like we need that in a meme. That's funny. Yeah. But I agree. And that leads me to this other point that you make in the book that I think is interesting. If you could explain what you meant when you write that your future is just as important as your present. How does that fit into what you're advising people to do?
I ran into the situation where I set a goal. And once I've achieved that goal, I think then I have to look for more purpose. So in my years now where I had set those goals, I really set goals pretty regularly, and then I wanted to be honest with myself, because in all fairness to the goals that were achieved, that I really believe in setting new goals for new achievements. And so this whole idea of you have to have goal, you have to have a drive, you have to have a purpose, you have to have a roadmap, you have a destination. When you reach that destination, then you reevaluate yourself, and then you start the next level or the next goal. The goals are endless, and it's never to be thought of as a way to not be motivated to reach a new goal. And they're always out there, because there is no end in sight. But to reach that goal is to take pleasure and have it attained that. So in my own way, when I accumulated a proficiency in auditing, I then knew that that proficiency wasn't the bigger picture. So then I then moved to being in businesses. And then once I had attained the proficiency of a business, then I knew it was time to move on and start again. And so I refused to accept the place that I'm in and then make a new challenge for myself. I tell you, it makes life so much more interesting. Starting out again and again and again, you could see that in the book and in my travels, how there's never enough. And there's always another achievement to attain. And so I don't begin to mention all of those many, many ruts in the road or the blocks in the road that attempted to stop me. But I always found a way to move on.
I think that's excellent advice. People need to always think about that, or they get stuck, as you said, in those ruts, and they only see the ruts and not the successes.
Exactly. And they're forever mourning those ruts and always finding the excuse, and whether it's someone else or some inability of their own, that they stay in that rut. And I think it's great when some people have a job for 30 years sitting at the same desk, but I think of that as just a waste of life. And there's so many things happening out there. And so to be in that same position, I'll give you a very good example that I have. I had a very good friend that was the head examiner of the savings and loan industry. And this is one of many examples, but he retired the typical way from the state. And one year I approached him after he retired a couple of weeks later, and he was in his front yard on a stool picking the weeds from his grass. And I said, and I was younger then, and I said, come on, with all you know about the savings loan industry and all the help that you could give or be put yourself out as a consultant, and you're picking grass. And he had no idea what I was talking about. We went through, and maybe we still do now, where people look at the word retire. And I just look at, that's probably one of the worst things for our health, one of the worst things for our soul, is to think that we pull back and not go any further when they have so much to give. I mean, that to me is such a waste. And of course, I can say that a lot of people that do that die early.
And your friend is an example of someone who could have gone to a college, and even if he only taught one class a week at a community college, he would have been sending that information back into the next generation, and it would have been stimulating.
Absolutely.
You don't
absolutely
need to do it for the money, and you don't want to be crazy busy. I understand having a resting period, but exactly, there's a small thing he could have done that would have kept that sort of...
Yeah, I just have a love for the dollar a year man. He puts out his wisdom and his experience, and he does it and gets a lot of joy out of it, helps a lot of people. And here again, they have so much to give. And just to close the door. And that's why, you know, a lot of the fellows that I've known, they retire and they play golf. And I thought, oh my God, golf people will probably hate me right now, but I have to tell you, hitting that ball and walking down the course, I don't think we were meant to live that way.
Well, it was Mark Twain, no, it was Will Rogers who said, golf is a walk spoiled. He saw no reason for that whole sport.
Yeah,
it's true, but I understand what you're saying about the fact that when we have learned so much, and it's kind of what people did in the ancient days, a sage would continue to pass that information on. There wasn't a sort of resting period. And there's a balance, because you want to rest, but you don't want to just stop.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay, so let's talk about if you have any sort of tips about how a person can go about helping to define their goals in life so they can move toward this wealth, this richness of a good life.
Well, in my case, when I was a young boy, I tried to caddy. And among other things, the bag was as big as I was. And so I was always the last one to be picked out of the pen to carry a bag. But what an opportunity it was to meet someone wealthy enough. Typically it was a doctor or a businessman, well-dressed, and then carry the bag and just listen to them talk was so inspirational, and how they would treat me and give me courtesy as I was carrying their golf bag. Mm-hmm. This was before the days of the golf cart.
Exactly.
And now they have the golf cart, so now what they called exercise, that's even gone now.
True.
but be as it may, starting in those years, meeting the right people. And so wherever you are, at whatever station in life you are, you have to make those connections with the right people, always remembering them. And so these days, or surely in the last 20 or 30 years, every time I wanted to do something, I knew someone who could help me in that direction, whether it was in the banking system, the stock market, wherever it was, I always had connections. I always was a friend to people in all the walks of life. So when it came time for me to need something, I had a destination, I had an opportunity and a relationship to work with someone. And I'll tell you, it's quite nice. Someone that knows something, and if you give them the chance to explain what they know, they pretty much like to do that. So they like to lend a hand and help you. And I found, wouldn't necessarily call them mentors, but I say, I don't think you can develop much if you don't have connections and friends in order to go to.
I believe that truly. And I think you're talking about, we talk a lot now about the friends online, and there's a difference in that you're talking about real relationships, not just acquaintances.
That's right. Yeah, because here again, we get to the superficial and we get to the nonsense of a friend. I find the little that I know about it, when they talk about friends, it's more of a social kind of thing. And not a more sophisticated relationship as to, oh, you're my friend, oh yeah, you like a car, or you like to do some sport, or you like this. No, I like to go deeper with my relationships. And what do you do? How do you do it? What is it that you want to do? And what can I learn from you, and how can we share experiences? And it's absolutely amazing when you start to reach a person at this level that you now have something so much deeper than the how do you feel business. You know, all of that is a pretense. I think I know people in a deeper way and more. And I don't get to people with the familiar, but there's nothing wrong with that, but it doesn't give you the real depth of who they are and what they are.
I understand that. I agree with that. Okay, so what were you hoping to contribute by writing this book? What was your goal with the book?
I did write the book, and of course I had someone rewrite it for me. So I'll be plain about that. Although
That's very kind of you.
Yeah, well, I do like to write. But I'm not a professional writer, so we left it there. But in the sense of the book and what I wanted to achieve is I feel like, what a chance that I could give someone that they could find something in this book of value from my experience that I could put down on paper. And I try, like anything, not to make this a ego trip on any way, but like a handbook of how someone with my limited abilities could achieve something. And so I try to show people in the various examples in the business sense, it's not that hard. And if someone like me can do something, I want to tell you how it can be done. So it's like a handbook as opposed to a book on my life. And there are far more sophisticated books with a lot more comprehensive analysis on a business. But I always took it from defining a business or anything in its most simplest, down-to-earth form, and I just simply wanted to pass that on to people. Over the years, I have put a lot of people onto investments in the business, and I love the idea that they took my principles, and they're not mine, ownership of them, but took my principles. I have put almost a dozen people into a prosperous situation. And the only way that I could reach more people is perhaps then put out a book and give some principles out there that you could then pick up. And so I wanted a wider spread of what I did and how I did it, so people could then follow some idea or catch some idea. You know, more recently at a sophisticated college, well, all colleges are sophisticated, but I mean a well-known college, which I'll not mention, I had the opportunity to give a talk. And at the end of the talk, people came up with real questions about themselves and what I thought about it and asked my opinion. And I thought, it must have been a good talk. And it must have aroused their insides as to what makes a person a business person.
That's true. And that's the sort of the concept of mentorship, which is leading us back to my general last question. And you covered this briefly when you mentioned your brother, but I wondered if there were any other people that you truly considered to be mentors in your life. And is there anyone that you personally have mentored that you want to talk about?
Well, not only my brother, but my mother. And of course, I really felt that I came into my own later on in life when I come to a great friend. His name is Ed DiLoretto. Ed was a philanthropist. And I then realized that since I had the wealth, that now I owed all this success, and to be able to help others achieve that same success. Because early in life, when I left college and working for the Internal Revenue Service, I was auditing wealthy people. And the people that seem to be the best with those that are most generous.
Ah.
Those that give money to causes, and it doesn't matter, but it's the giving. How the people handle that is one thing, but I was working with the people that were giving the money out, and I have to tell you, they were kinder, they were happier people. And so when I had achieved a certain sense of wealth, and I came across this mentor, Ed DiLoretto, a very generous man, hardworking, and he was funneling money for causes. And one day we were talking, and I don't know who said it first, and we said, isn't it funny? The more you give in the way of the money that you have accumulated, the more money and wealthier you become. and it's like you put out $5,000, and the next day, unbeknownst to you, in comes $5,000, $10,000. I mean, it just seems to work that way. And I said to Ed, you know, Ed, that's what's happening to me. He says, well, you're not by yourself. The more you give, the more you get. And it just works that way. Go ahead and take that risk and you'll find out. You'll find out that your generosity is continually rewarded. And so I felt, boy, I better open up that generosity. And so I felt that, not that I owe a person or a school or a nonprofit, but I just owe it for the goodness that has come to me to be able to then do it to others. So certainly when I look for mentors, there's a mentor for generosity. There's a mentor for hard working. I couldn't find one person without leaving out 10 more persons as to how I learned from them and I picked up from them and moved on.
I think that's a beautiful way to stop, because yes, that is the whole purpose of this concept of mentoring, and that we do, through these relationships, learn from so many other people. There can't just be one person. And that just means that you've enriched your life by adding all these other people around to it.
That's right.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for sitting down with us and sharing these ideas. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening to the Mentors Podcast, sponsored by the Barbera Foundation, whose mission is to promote positive change by inspiring others to engage in their community. Your host has been Dr. Roseanne Welch. Our music was composed by Patrick Abate, technical direction by Douglas E. Welch, and Kathleen Childress designed our website. For more information and to read more about the great mentors in history, visit mentorsproject.org and join us for our next conversation.